Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
69 minutes.
Get it?
And you think I'm going to like this?
Because of that dirty sex thing?
Have you seen Robert? Paul Champagne, the try it out guy?
What if I like took a video of myself peeing on a bush or something and be like, this could be you? You think like that would work?
It couldn't be easier.
Wow, okay, this smells awful.
Join us for 69 minutes.
Where you'll wonder.
I'll take care of it because I always take care of it.
Why?
That just played, that is what the thing is going to be?
Yeah.
And so I was like the David Goggins of pregnancy.
You don't get to have six kids and not be into working.
It's
a lifestyle, Drew.
It is!
Shut up!
Thank you!
Welcome to Dr. Drew After Dark. Please be advised that Dr. Drew After Dark may contain sexually oriented content and be unsuitable for young children.
Hey now, welcome to After Dark. Dr. Drew After Dark, of course. The phone number 818-253-1693. The emails at drdrewafterdark@gmail.com. We appreciate all of it. And do look out for the announcement when we are letting you know that we are taking live calls. Speaking of that, if you missed that, I do live calls oftentimes on a streaming show Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday at 3 o'clock. Find that at drdrew.tv. Today, my guest, Jen Fulweiler, nationally touring stand-up, best-selling author, mom of six, which I'm one of Christina P's favorite people, and first comedy tour with her personal credit card. Tell me about that. That's crazy.
It's probably the most insane thing I've ever done. I wasn't represented, no manager, no agent. But I was doing stand-up. I had some fans, and I thought I could do a tour. I have no attention to detail. So,
but how does it work? Do you pay for a theater for the night?
Or yes.
How did you know how to do that even?
Okay, because I'd done a book tour. I had rented smaller places, but I found out theaters are half price on Monday nights. Oh. So I called. Literally, I would Google.
Like a movie theater or a theater?
No, theater.
Like a theater.
Performance
theater.
Hall.
Like a proscenium theater.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. So I would call theater. I would literally Google rent theater in Columbus, Ohio. Oh, I called them. They thought I was a prank caller because people evidently don't do this. And I'd say, what's your Monday night rate? You can rent out like a 500-seater for like $2,000. And so then I kept all the profit because I just paid
Why
a flat
hasn't
fee.
This become a thing for comedians now? You know what I mean?
It's, yeah.
It seems like you've discovered something. As usual, the middleman has taken a cut and you just got rid of the middleman.
I got rid of the middleman. And well, now I have a middleman and I like them a lot, actually. But so I think people just don't know you can do it. Now, I will say it was 1,000 times harder than I thought it would be. To give you just one example, we had to get event insurance because I don't have a promoter, I don't have agents.
Oh, yeah.
And so I had to actually sign something that said there will be no tractor pulls, no drag races, and no flame throwing at my events.
Pretty much guarantee that, I would say.
Well, it kind of gave me ideas. I was like, well, should I? I mean, it sounds like people are doing this and it's working really well. If I have to initial these columns, maybe I should.
Yes.
Of 13 shows, 11 sold out. The other two came really close to selling out. And it worked, but I mean, we would have been in bankruptcy. Like if I hadn't sold tickets, because I booked all these theaters and all the support. And the other funny thing is I ran out of money for staff, so I just had to rope my kids into coming. My kids were literally my tour manager. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. They loved it.
How old are they?
Well, at the time, they were ages like 14 down to 4. And yeah, but no, Dr. Drew, it gave them so much mileage because when they went back to school after that summer, they were like, you know, their little friends would be like, what did you do this summer? I rode the big slide at the water park. My kids were like, I was in Toledo and this guy put the 36C gels on the lights and I was like, why do I even have a rider if you people aren't going to read it? You know, this is like my 12-year-old
tour manager.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that's hysterical. It was a lot of fun. Now, the Naughty Corner, is it on Amazon Prime?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, yeah. It's on Amazon. It's also YouTube. Free on YouTube. It's okay. Just, yeah, you can watch it on YouTube.
And you live here.
Austin, Texas.
Austin.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Is that where you've always lived?
Or? Yes. Yes. I'm a native Austinite.
Which, isn't it amazing how the center of gravity of comedy has moved down here?
That was some great luck. That was incredible.
Yeah. And so I have a million questions. So did you always, this is the obvious question to ask, and I'll just ask it because I got to frame it somehow. Is this something you always wanted to do before you were a mom? Did you want to do comedy, or were you a performer in some other capacity?
It was. I was a public speaker. Mainly, I was a writer. All I ever wanted to do in my life was write. So I was, as a doctor and someone who knows about psychology, this might make a lot of sense to you, that I was an only child. We moved a lot when I was a kid. I had no friends. I was bullied all the time. And so writing
bullied
was just,
by women or men or both?
Both. I mean, just whoever was around. It was really bad. And
what do you think that was?
That I got a really bad perm and I'm very tall and but I was always the new kid and I have no siblings.
Yeah.
So there was no one to have my back. Mm. I was an easy target. Mm. And I just looked strange. And so having no friends, coming home from bullying, I would just get out in front of our old computer and I would just write. That was my escape.
Like a journal?
No, tortured novels, a lot of tortured novels, things like that. I wrote multiple novels in high school.
Wow.
All of them very bad, but it was, you know, it was a good outlet. And I think when I had kids...
Did you go formally train as a writer? Was that...
I studied it a lot in college.
Where'd you go to college?
At UT. I graduated.
So you're right here.
Yeah, yeah.
Were you here... towards the end of the high school and stuff too? Or
yes.
Just...
Yeah, I finished high school in this area and
okay.
then I went to University of Texas.
Okay.
And
was that a good experience for you?
It was. I'd started out at Texas A&M, which is very religious. Mm. I was a lifelong atheist and I was like, I cannot be around these religious people. So I switched to Austin solely for that reason. And I was
is
like,
that
oh,
college,
thank God, atheist.
City, College Station? Or
College
something?
Station.
Adam and I went down there 100 Oof. Years ago.
Yeah.
And I've got a great story.
Okay.
So, they brought us in and it was a big stadium, like one of the, like, I think it was your basketball stadium. Or
yeah.
Something.
Huge.
And a lot, we were late. The flights were delayed and this and that. And then the kids that had brought us came in the room with like some faculty and stuff. And there was a lot of, this is a religious place. This is, you got to be careful. Just don't foist anything on them. You know, it's just kind of keep it cool, guys,
oh
you know?
My gosh.
And we're like, yeah, yeah, we understand. We'll be good. And, we get out there and we're like, hey, we'll take some questions and stuff. And this one guy that looked like he played center for the Aggies is across he was sort of up here in the stadium, and he grabs the mic and he goes, I couldn't wait to talk to you guys. I'm so excited you guys were here. I went to a prostitute 3 nights ago, and when I got in there, I couldn't get erect, and he started crying, like sobbing. And we were like, everybody, Texas A&M, everybody. And we were like, well, thank you for asking. Hang on a second. We had to comment about, we had to tell them what we had just been through. He was the first question.
First question. Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we're
yeah.
like, oh, okay, religious place. Okay, got it. Prostitution, every cool, I guess, where you guys are.
That is like, everything I would expect yeah. from a Dr. Drew and Adam at College Station story.
Yeah.
I mean, that is, yeah. So yeah. that's College Station.
Yeah.
So I was just super atheist. I just had to leave. So I got to Austin, Texas and was like, oh, a bunch of godless people. This is incredible. Exactly what I'm looking for. So, yeah. So I did study writing. Writing was my escape. And I think, like a lot of women who have kids, I almost shut down what I really wanted to do.
Yeah, you're jumping ahead of me now. Yes,
oh,
I get
sorry.
That part. No.
I used to be a radio host, so I'm sorry. This is your show.
Well, no, don't worry about that. It's that I know where the meat is where the kids arrive.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay.
We're going to get there. I just want to make sure
yes.
I understand you before that part, because
yes.
we have triplets too.
I know.
Right. And so you know, we went through our own stuff. So I when you say six, I'm like,
we spaced them out. It wasn't six at once.
I don't care. But okay, so you're in college, you're studying writing. And what did you want to do at that point?
I wanted to work at a big ad agency. That was my thing.
Write copy, right?
Yeah,
ad copy.
Copywriting.
For television?
Magazines.
Okay. And did you Mad Men stuff?
Yeah, exactly.
And did talk radio happen to you around that time, or was that later after momhood?
No, that was later. I was already a mom. I already had six kids later. When I started in talk radio. Yeah.
Don't do things small.
No, never.
And was radio part of the comedy thing too?
No, radio came as an extension of writing. I had a couple books out. I got published because of my love of writing. And what's funny is I turned down SiriusXM twice. Mm. I said, like, I'm just a writer. I do things on paper. And they're like, yeah, no, we're not going to take no for an answer. And I'm glad they had that attitude.
How did you like doing radio?
I loved it. Yeah. It was great. It was really a lot of fun. Yeah.
It is interesting. And so comedy, where does that come into this? Is this...
So I had this epiphany where I realized I'd always loved doing humor writing. And I love a challenge, as you can probably tell. And I thought, you know what the hardest thing to do is in humor writing would be stand-up comedy, because it has to be perfect. It has to be distilled. It is the purest form of that art. And I was like, that sounds terrifying. It sounds hard. If I did it, 99% chance I just embarrass myself and fail. So I'm in.
Where else have you been like that? Do you go, climb Kilimanjaro and stuff like that too? Or do you... Where you take something and go, that's got to be hard. I'm going to do it if it's hard.
Yeah, nothing physical. I mean, like when I saw a sci-fi movie about a guy who was just a brain in a jar, and I was jealous. So, I mean, nothing physical. Okay, never push myself.
Okay, what else, intellectual or
Well, frankly, I would say having so many kids. I never wanted kids. I have no natural maternal instincts. None. I'm an only child.
That's impossible.
Yeah, my husband is an only child. My dad was an only child. I'd only held like one other baby before my kid. I mean, I didn't aspire to be a mom ever. I never babysat. I'm not the one who like asked to hold your baby.
And so you got married at what age?
26.
And how long had you guys been together at that point?
2 years, 3 years.
Okay. Yeah. And the relationship is good. Everything's solid. We
just been married 20 years as of a couple of weeks ago.
And all the kids put a challenge on
that. Oh, yeah.
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 So you have a kid, right? Yeah. You have your first child. You're how old? 28 or something? You're
27.
27.
Yeah.
And what, I like this, I'm going to do this, or this is super hard, I better go all in on it.
You know what it was? I had some bad influences. So I'd been atheist all my life. We both converted to Catholicism.
Explain that to me.
I know. So I don't know. I mean, I just read a bunch of books and I was like, yeah, I think that makes sense. And it's probably my extreme personality. Like, let's not be spiritual but not religious. You know, let's be religious but not spiritual. And choose the most rigid, alternative lifestyle.
People
religion.
Don't appreciate also Catholicism, though. It is kind of, in many respects, it's the most intellectual.
Yeah, it's.
And did you read Thomas Aquinas or something?
Of course.
Okay,
oh,
so
I
this
love
is your,
Thomas
okay,
Aquinas.
So this sort of makes some sense now. So did you talk to Christina about that?
No, we actually didn't have a chance to
get
into
it. You know, she studied that in England.
Oh, I didn't know
that.
She went
to Cambridge, help me, Oxford. Help.
Was it?
She gets pissed at me every time I do this. I think I keep saying Oxford. I think it was actually Cambridge.
Oh, that would have been a hot episode. I think YMH listeners would love hearing about Aquinas.
She read all 9 volumes of Sir Thomas Aquinas. Yeah, St. Thomas Aquinas.
Okay, now I'm more obsessed with her than I was.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Reasonable. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, crazy.
So, and the Catholics, like, they don't do contraception. I was like, well, I'll never do that. And then I was like, well, that's actually kind of a good idea. So, wow, we just, I mean, we're like, so... When you don't use contraception,
you have babies.
Yeah, well,
yeah,
well no,
okay,
no. Within Catholicism, there are all these different, very scientific, like very accurate methods, like the Creighton method and all this, and they have. I mean, they're as accurate as the pill. Like, 95%. So we use. It's actually a brand new method. It's called the Fulweiler guesstimation method. Mm. It has about a 20% effectiveness rate
and 80% failure.
And I wouldn't say failure. It was great. I love having a big family. We had so I had 6 babies in 8 years, just one after another. It becomes a lifestyle at some point,
Yes.
Your favorite word, Drew.
Yeah, I know. I've been taking issue with the word lifestyle lately.
That's right.
Because it glosses over so much.
Right, doesn't it?
The first time I heard it was in The Mob Wives. I'm like, honey, that wasn't a lifestyle. That was that was just a criminal father.
Yeah.
It's like, what are we glossing over here? And now all the swingers are talking about their lifestyle and this lifestyle.
Right.
fuck you guys. That's just glossing over a more complicated story.
Totally what I'm doing here.
Which is true with parenting. I'm here to tell you. So yeah, we had this experience where it was dropped into our life all at once. And so I really felt when we decided to go forward with three, they were trying to get us to reduce to two.
Yeah, they do that.
Yeah. And talk about not Catholic, you know.
Yeah.
And we did not feel we could do that. We just couldn't do it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I really felt like a poker player who had all his chips in front of him and just went, okay, we're going all in. That's it. Wow. We're all in on the parenting thing. Did you ever have that experience where you're just like, oh, this is what I do now. This is what I am. This is it.
Yeah. And it's
what number child?
Right. Oh, for me, it was one.
Right away?
Like number one. Yeah. Well, isn't it almost like a trenches mentality?
You get survival full on.
Exactly. Well,
my hair was, you know, Annie's color when I was, they were born and it turned white in a year.
No, what's funny, same with me. I dye my hair. My hair is like your color. Mm-hmm. And it started
that would look cool, actually. Right. That would look good.
I might go natural at some point. But no, I mean, my hair started turning gray like very quickly after all this. But I think there is kind of an analogy to literally being in a warfare trench situation, because it's like, there are no breaks. There's no getting out of this. You're in it, so
you just keep going.
Yeah,
and for women, they have the added thing of what it does to your body.
Oh yeah,
it's intense.
It's very intense.
But in terms of not having a maternal, I'm not sure we're going to take any calls or anything today. I've got a billion questions for you today. In terms of not having a maternal instinct, you still. You know, one of the things, it's that drive to have a kid that lets you sacrifice your body, right? Or was it the religious thing now that was keeping you going and willing to do that?
I didn't have the maternal instincts because I wasn't part, I was kind of, you know, culture in the 80s and the 90s, let's face it, it was a little bit loveless. It was very individualistic. Mm. And I just didn't have exposure to, you probably know people who have big families and they have all the cousins in and out and their aunties over here. I didn't have any of that. And so I think I didn't have maternal instincts because I never had an opportunity to just see if this was for me or not. And I mean, I often say that I was so dissociated from that part of the human experience that in the back of my mind, I kind of thought that new human beings came from a cloning room at the back of Starbucks. Like they just came in wearing wire rim glasses, like 20 years old. I forgot what I learned in health class about like how babies come into the world. So I think maybe I could have had some instincts if I'd ever been exposed to it. But then, you probably know how it is. Even if you're shocked by the idea of pregnancy, once you actually kind of get into it and think about what's going on, I mean, you develop your own way of loving this kid and being all in, even if it doesn't look like a Martha Stewart situation.
But I'm wondering the willing to sacrifice so many times. To me, when I see women do that, it looks like a little amnesia, like you don't remember what it's really like. It meets this drive to reproduce, to have a baby. And you didn't have that. So what was there something about the Catholic faith or was your husband pushing at that point? Would he want more?
No, we were both of the same mind. Like, oh, this is great. Kids are great. We should wait a while before we have the next one. And then we're like, oh, we're not waiting a while. Okay.
Is it just a failure of the system?
No, I think it's like, okay, you know
the
what?
The Fulweiler system.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The Fulweiler guesstimation. Yeah. I should teach like a masterclass.
It's you know, for those that want to end up where you are, it would be a great way to get there.
It'd be very short. It'd be like 20 seconds long. Here's how we do family planning. You make a gin and tonic and, you know, see where the evening leads you. So, you know what? It's interesting that we live in this culture where, like, we've got David Goggins, who I'm the biggest fan of. And he'll be like, you know, you got to run 12 miles so that you can get fit or whatever. And when it comes to the fitness realm, when it comes to the diet realm, we intuitively understand that it's not sacrifice in the sense of something bad. There's this incredible payoff. And so I was like the David Goggins of pregnancy, that I didn't see it as this woe is me martyr sacrifice. Mm-hmm. It was like, I'm getting a whole squad here. You know, I'm really socially awkward. This is a chance to have six friends and my only chance to have six friends. Okay. So I didn't see it as like a woe is me
sacrifice.
Was
six the number?
No. I'm sorry to make this a very complicated interview, but I had a very serious blood clotting disorder. I had to give myself shots in the stomach every day throughout all my pregnancies. Really went off the rails.
You have TTP or something?
No, it's called Factor 2. It's very unusual. I inherited it from both parents.
Oh,
so I don't know if they met at a family reunion or what, but homozygous for that.
That's crazy.
Yeah, so I was on blood thinners.
Doesn't factor two, you had factor two deficiency, right?
Yeah, I think so.
And so doesn't that cause both clotting and bleeding?
For me, it was just clotting.
Just clotting, okay.
Yeah, because in pregnancy number 6, I ended up with bilateral pulmonary embolisms. So the clots in my lungs, some of them were so big, the guy who did the CT scan said a layman could point out these clots on your skin.
Yeah, of course.
Like, they're huge.
So you're taking heparin all through your
Yeah.
Pregnancy.
Yeah. Lovenox, $900 a month. Yep. Beautiful. After insurance. Wonderful.
So
yeah.
Do you have any pulmonary disability from all that? Because that can really...
Yeah. I do have lung damage. I can't breathe as well because of that. And so after number 6, we were like, okay, well, maybe we need to do something other than the full Wyler. We still did the natural.
Putting you on birth control pill may have its own risks.
Exactly.
So,
right.
Do you have to take Coumadin all the time or anything? Or do you do anything else?
I should. I really should.
Or Eliquis or one of those?
I should, Dr. Drew. I definitely should. But they said it. I love the way you're looking at me.
Because it's, you used I could the way people use lifestyle.
Right, like there was, yeah, exactly.
Was glossing over, yeah, a lot.
I'm trying to seem less crazy than I am. This is my first show on your podcast. I'm trying to seem
like a normal human being. You are normal. You are bright as hell. You're fascinating. But you should be taking some Eliquis or some Coumadin.
Okay. You know what? I'll start that tomorrow. I will.
Yeah. Or at least a low dose or something.
They believe that there are no issues as long as I'm not pregnant. So I was strictly warned not to have any more kids after.
Do they ever worry about prolonged plane? I mean, you tour. I mean, yeah. Prolonged plane flights and stuff like that. Do they worry?
They seem to really believe, my hematologist seemed to really believe that as long as I'm not pregnant, it really shouldn't be an issue. He did recommend Eliquis, but he was like, honestly, it'll probably be fine even if you don't.
I get that.
Yeah.
You can take a low dose of Eliquis too. I mean, you don't have to take a full dose.
Yeah, okay. I should do that.
Think about it.
That would be funny if I end up actually getting on that drug because I went on your show. I was like, well, Dr. Drew told me.
Well, I'm breaking through your denial a little bit here.
Okay, so. That's good. This is an intervention. I like
it. It's not intervention. It's just a little friendly, like, it's called therapeutic wonderment. I wonder if you ought to do that.
That's a good term.
It is a very effective term. Taught it to these guys for years. Okay, so now we're at the 6 kids point in our conversation, which is where it's all happening. Now you go out on the road to be a comedian. How old was the oldest kid at that point?
When I booked my own tour, the oldest was 14, yeah.
And you already had a following, right, online?
From SiriusXM, yeah.
From Sirius, that was. But when did you start doing the videos and things?
That was during COVID because, you know, I couldn't tour. I quit, okay, SiriusXM to go all in on comedy in March of 2020.
Okay.
And I was left in a situation where I had no income, no job. It was pretty catastrophic.
But your husband's okay. He's working.
He's not really into working. That's not, yeah. He, and what's, okay.
You don't get to have 6 kids and not be into working.
No, well, okay, so
it's
he.
It's a lifestyle, Drew.
Shut up!
Thank you.
It is a lifestyle.
My husband grew up poor.
Okay.
He ended up going to Yale and graduating in 3 years with honors, Columbia Law School, Stanford Business School.
What the fuck?
Yes, exactly.
He knows how to work, clearly.
He just feels like he's done enough work at this point. My Yale man husband, like when I married a Yale man, I was like, if I can just get a ring on it, the minute that engagement ring slips onto my finger, all of my financial problems just disappear. But he's discovered work-life balance. And he's like, well, you know, I've done a lot.
Did he have a workaholic phase?
He did, very much so.
And did that help you guys be okay now? I just worry about the 6 kids.
Yeah. And
okay, he's backing down a little bit.
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
Well, and let me be clear. My husband is a wonderful man. If we got in a dire financial situation, of course he would go back to work.
I kind of don't blame him. You know what I mean? It's like he's done, you're right, he's done a lot.
Okay, think about this. From an evolutionary psychology perspective, men, he like back in, you know, for the first million years of human history, when you hit like 40, 45.
You were dead.
You were dead. Or if you weren't dead, you had sons who could take over
100%.
The farm or the hunting or
you
whatever.
You had grandkids.
Yes, I'm telling you that I think men hit their mid-40s and they're like, I'm out. Like their genes are like, I have done enough work. I'm sick of it.
So there is a weird thing that does, I'm struggling with it right now myself. It's not that I don't want to work. It's that I don't work the same way.
Okay, in what sense?
I used to get up at 5 in the morning and see 50 patients a day and come home at 10 o'clock at night.
Wow.
And
media. Like
media, we sort of shoved it in the corners here and there. I'd do it like Friday afternoon to Saturday afternoon, that kind of stuff. But I was a severe workaholic.
Yeah.
And now I can't imagine doing that, but I have immense guilt about it. It's very
guilt
weird.
In the sense. I mean, I assume your family is financially okay.
We're fine.
But, yeah.
It's guilt in the sense that I'm meant to do that. I should be doing that. I'm not up to my worth as a, you know. When I was deeply into it, I just thought it was what I was doing was so important. So important. And I was had great. You know what it is. I'm this is so funny. It's become like my therapeutic environment in here. I talk to these guys about things. Yeah. I'm like, yeah, that lifestyle thing does bother me. but is that I had disdain for people that didn't go all the way in the practice of medicine, do it all the way. And now that's me. And it's like, but I'm doing lots of other things and it's creative and it's interesting and I'm still helping people and I still am grateful and I still value it, but I have this weird guilt.
So your guilt is not about your relationship to your family. Like, are you being a provider? Your guilt is about, are you honoring the profession that you have chosen?
Am I doing? Well, I'm not even sure it's that. It's, I had disdain for guys like me. and so I am that guy now. It's like, it's hard. But I'm wondering what his version of this is.
I think his version of it is, I think he got very disillusioned about the value that his corporate job was adding.
Was he doing law?
To the world. Yeah, he was doing law. And so he used to work at the big firms in New York, like in the World Trade Center,
like an investment banker?
No, he did like mergers and acquisitions law. This man could make a lot of money. I mean, my husband's earning potential is very high.
It happened to a friend of mine too, a guy named Paul Mercurio. He got the comedy bug in the middle of that and had to leave it and do comedy full time.
Was he married?
Yes. And everything's fine. He's now the lead producer at Colbert and things. And
okay. So it worked out.
Yeah.
Good.
And he's a great comedian. He loves it and everything. And he couldn't have done it. You know, it's like, couldn't. You know, certain point. Even it's so weird to me when people are brilliant and really good at that stuff and they just can't do it.
Yeah.
But comedy finds you, right?
Oh, absolutely.
That's what I'm learning from talking to lots of comedians. And you haven't really told me that story though. It found you as a challenge.
It did.
When did the funny part grab you? Because people that are funny need to be funny, in my experience. Is that not you?
It's 100% me. Yeah. I had done humor writing. I mean, I started a website in 2002 where I did humor writing, and it would go viral, like shutting down my server viral. Remember back when it was like just websites? There were no blogs. There was no social media. So all that stuff went viral. And I loved it, but I just thought I didn't see an extension of that. As I mentioned, when I became a mother, I think sometimes women who have kids, we shut down our dreams. We don't let ourselves acknowledge what maybe we really want to do because we feel like that would be impossible. And
sometimes it is.
Well, that's true.
You know what I mean? With kids. I mean, for instance, like, could you leave and do your tours if your husband didn't have work-life balance now?
True. You know, well, he was working more at that time. But yeah, I see what you're saying. So what happened?
Having somebody tending to the kids is really important. It lets another person do what they want to do, whatever that is.
Right.
And I'm very much into the idea that each of you gets your chance to do it. I mean, I think that's really important.
Absolutely. And certainly this has all been very much a partnership between the two of us. And so, when we had young kids, I was just fully supporting his work. He didn't go back into corporate law.
Did you resent it at all?
No, not at all.
Yeah.
No,
see,
no,
it works when you really have a functioning relationship and you're committed to your family and stuff.
Right.
You figured out together.
Right.
What you're gonna do.
And I was genuinely happy when you have a good marriage. his success is my success and vice versa. And I would be so genuinely happy.
And now it's vice
happy.
Versa, I'm sure.
Yeah, it is. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And so, so he did, he was still working a bit when I first started the tour. But so the comedy hit me because when I was on Sirius XM, people would say, oh, I love it that you do stand-up bits on your show, because I had a solo show. I had a lot of time to fill, 2 hours a day. And they said, you're doing stand-up. And I realized, well, I'm not exactly doing stand-up, but maybe I should try it.
Was it all written out before, or was it spontaneous?
No, I don't want to say I totally phoned in that show every single day, but...
Well, but you'd said that your humor was all written to begin with, and I wondered if that was the way you got into comedy, or was it just in you?
I think it was just in me. It was me talking trash on the radio and thinking, I should distill this into...
You and Christina are perfect. Talking shit.
This is exactly. Yeah.
This is perfection.
Totally.
Probably you guys don't hang out together.
I'm ready. Like, you know, right now I'm just driving slowly by her house in the middle of the night. But if she ever wants to invite me in, I'm ready for that.
All right, so we got a lot of stuff we can do here. Oh, they're in fact alerting me. Let's get to it, guys. Enough talking. you guys tell me, what do you want first? Since you're pushing me along, there are a few good live calls here ready to go. Should I get to them? All right.
Yeah, let's do it.
He says yes. Okay. Here we go. This is Joanna.
I am.
Hi, Joanna. Here we go. Joanna.
Hello.
Hi there.
Hi, Joanna.
You're on with Jen Fulweiler. How are you?
I'm good. How are you? I'm running outside real quick because I'm at work. So hold on.
That's incredible.
She's got an embarrassing question.
Okay.
Yeah, here we go. What kind of work do you do?
Yeah, no, I need to talk to Dr. Drew.
What kind of work do you do, Joanna?
I work in financing at a furniture store.
Oh, so there's a whole bunch of you in there and you got to get away from that group.
Yeah, I can't... kind of a personal question, so I didn't want to.
I hear
I'm
you.
Relatively new, so I didn't want to.
Got it.
Give too much.
Okay, what's going on?
Okay, So my question was, there's people out here too. My question was, so if I am by myself, I can manually take care of myself, right?
You can climax, right?
But with other people, I cannot. So I don't know if it's like a stage fright thing or just a physical thing. You know?
Are you heterosexual?
I am.
Okay. And you have one partner, or do you just, are you involved with somebody, or is it sort of into just?
I have none right now. It's non-existent right now.
But
it's been quite a while, doctor.
Okay. Let me ask it this way. When you were in a relationship, was it a satisfying long-term relationship, or did you have good communication with that person? Did you feel comfortable? Have you had that kind of thing?
Yeah, we did. I dated him for 4 years.
Okay.
Yes, okay. We dated for 4 years, and
Okay, so hold on. This is very common, so I don't want you to feel weird about this. It is very common, actually. And how old are you?
Okay.
How old are you?
I'm 26.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
26?
Very common. So, Joanna, let me give a little crack at it first, if you wish.
Wait, oh, me?
Yeah. Joanna. Yeah. I'm sorry, I'm looking at Jen saying I was Joanna.
Jen.
You're looking at me like, what?
Joanna, do you feel like, let's say when you just see yourself in the mirror when you get out of the shower, I mean, what is your initial gut reaction? How do you feel about yourself and the way you look?
Oh, I love myself. I love the way I look. I love everything about it. Yeah.
Good.
And I will say this though. Oh, go ahead.
Go finish your thought.
Yeah. Go ahead, Joanna.
Oh, I was going to say this, that when I'm by myself, you know, it's not a subtle thing. It's very much powerful.
Yeah.
And it's almost like I got to force it out. You know, I got to push it out.
Yeah. Are you on birth control pills?
I am not.
Good. Any medication otherwise?
No, sir.
Okay, good. You'd be amazed how often medication gets in the middle of this. People don't even think about it, and that's the issue. Okay, you want to crack out? I know what to tell her. I got some ideas.
I have some ideas, but I was going to assume that maybe it was a self-consciousness thing, but it sounds like it's not that. So you take it, Dr.
Drew. It's so interesting to me. It's interesting to me as a male. I wouldn't even have thought of that.
To me, what else could it be? Right. I'm drawing a blank now.
And so as a man, what this is more of a mechanical issue. And so I'm going right there. Even though you're absolutely correct that all that is important. And we established that she had comfort and she was in a stable relationship and she felt communicative and intimate. All those things are very important. As a male, you never think about because here's the thing about men. We like how you look because we're there. We're telling you with our penis. We like how you look. That's why we're there. So why you would be concerned about it is odd to us, which is kind of an interesting male-female thing just at the outset. Okay. But here's the thing, Joanna. Many young women no one ever sits down and say, hey, this is how most women work. And the reality is that the majority of women need some kind of direct stimulation like you do to yourself in order to have an orgasm. It's just not going to happen otherwise. Right. You're not going to have it with intercourse. Now, about 5% of women have stolen it from everybody else. They could have multiple orgasms. They only have orgasms with intercourse. They don't like oral sex or direct stimulation oftentimes.
Right.
And then there's people that are in between that are sort of usually need some kind of direct something, but sometimes we'll have an orgasm with intercourse, sometimes not. And there's all these variations on the theme. And it gets very confusing for women because they feel that they're different or broken or something. And then the women, I've heard this a million times where these women who have lots of orgasms look at their peers and just go, well, you haven't figured it out yet. It's like, no, it's a different biology. It's construction, a different thing. And you're with the majority, Joanna. Right. You're actually, most women are like you. Now, there are sort of two common solutions to the problem. Do you know what I'm going to talk about?
Vibrators?
Vibrator is one of the solutions. So it's doing something with your partner, manual stimulation, vibrator, something in addition to his penis or whatever. But the other thing is oral sex. Most women, some sort of direct stimulation that your partner can provide for you, if you talk to them about it, men are more than happy to oblige. Like I said, we're all about can do. We want to get the results. You tell us what you need. We're here to deliver.
Action oriented.
We'll deliver.
I love men. They get the job done. Yep.
But you should not. You should not be uncomfortable about this at all. The one thing I will warn you a little bit about is that some men get a little weird about sex toys. They feel that I think it's kind of Jen's looking at me like, what? I'm offended by that.
I'm learning. I'm taking notes. This is very instructive.
They get a little offended as though it's competition or something. Like they should be able to do it themselves. You know, if they want to get it done and you're bringing in hardware, it's like, well, now the hardware is doing it. I wanted to do it. But believe me, most guys are fine with it. So it's really about just you knowing what you want and need and communicating that to your partner and not feeling the least bit uncomfortable about it, okay?
Right.
But you
Can I ask you one more thing, Doctor?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, so what I will say is that when I'm with a partner, it's waterworks down there, you know, but when I'm by myself, there's nothing going on, but I can get there. Does that make sense?
It does. And, there probably is more going on than, you know,
maybe that's too intense.
No. okay. It's probably more going on than, you know, but let's be fair. Once there's stimulation of that region, there can be more lubrication. There just can be. Some women are set up that way. It's all good. You're completely normal. Don't worry about yourself. That's what I want you not to worry about yourself at all. Do we have any voicemails?
Yep.
Okay.
1 second.
It would have been great if she did that call in front of clients who were working on their financing.
I know, it'd be good. Or if they could hear my answer, it'd be even worse.
Put it on speakerphone. Let's just make this a group conversation.
Oh, my goodness.
Hi, Dr. Drew. So I have a very interesting question that I never hear women talk about, but I'm sure we all experience.
Okay.
So in between the labia majora and the labia minora, there's like this skin that isn't like outer skin. It's like an inner type skin.
Yes.
And it produces, like, I don't know, like juice, not juice,
sometimes,
but like an interesting area throughout the day. And
interesting area.
I feel like no women talk about this. And I want to know, like, does it really, like, secrete, like, other things like an armpit would? Or, like, what's going on there? Like, okay, what type of skin is it?
Okay.
How does that work? And why does no one talk about it? Thank okay. you. And right. see you later, Dr. Drew.
Cheers. Thank you, my dear. Any insights?
I think women don't talk about it because a lot of us are repressed and completely ignore our bodies. I was
still I'm it's like, 2024.
I know, yeah. I know, but that really suits me to just kind of ignore, pretend like, you know, like. So I didn't know any of the words she just said.
Do we have
the same anatomy?
Is that your Catholicism kicking in?
No. I was always uptight about that. That's one of the things that was a great fit for Catholicism about me. Just super. Let's be repressed and talk about nothing.
Will you use repression as that? You, it sort of suggests somebody did it to you, and it feels like you kind of did it to yourself. Maybe just sort of how you were.
Well, I think it's being very cerebral. I mean, again, like the brain and the jar thing. I just anything that involves the physical body, I've never had a lot of interest.
Were you sexually active before your marriage?
Can I skip that question? Oh. My husband is very, like, I don't know. Can I skip that one?
You can tell me more about him, though. He's very what?
Well, he is so private that I think he wanted me to go on this show and say that we reproduce asexually, amoeba,
so
you
he's
know.
He's very,
yeah.
Was he Catholic to begin with?
No, neither one of us were.
Okay.
Yeah.
What was his religion? Was he atheist also, or?
He was non-practicing Southern Baptist.
How did you guys meet?
At work. We worked at a high-tech company.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
What were you doing there? Were you doing copy for them?
Well, no, I was a programmer. I got into programming.
Were there other careers along the way here?
No, that's it. We've covered them all now at this point. But yeah, I have a math mind.
You're starting to remind me of, and I'm blanking on her name. She's was a violinist, a virtuoso violinist. She's on the internet.
One of the Dixie Chicks?
No. She's really known for internet for influencer stuff kind of thing. She's super brilliant. Has had like 9 careers and stuff too. And
oh, that, okay. Yeah. That's yeah. Although I'll say I'm sticking with stand-up. This is the only
I understand. I get it. Does that come up in any searches? No, child prodigy, violin, influencer, child prodigy.
I know who. Oh, she did. She did like a cover of a Christmas song that went really viral last year.
Okay,
I know who
that
you're
sounds
talking
like
about.
Her.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. She's like me, but with talent. That sounds incredible.
Yeah, but in her own area, because she's not known as a violinist anymore. She abandoned all that.
Oh, really?
Google is yeah.
Is she in stand up now too?
She's in sort of influencer stuff, right? I don't know how to characterize
oh,
it.
Oh no! No, is she posting like bikini pics now?
No, not like that. They're but like you, all these intellectual pursuits and things.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So it's all these are all violinists. She's not known as a violinist anymore. It's the problem.
She's probably on OnlyFans now.
No.
If she were smart, I mean that is a compliment. Make some money.
I interviewed her on the Dr. Drew podcast about 5 years ago. It might be interesting if it came up that way, but anyway. Programming. And it was just because you thought it was a hard thing and I better learn how to do it?
Oh, that was because it relaxes my crazy brain to have everything be perfectly efficient. In programming, everything has to work. And what's interesting is that there's actually a great overlap between comedy. I have my whole comedy set in a spreadsheet that's conditionally formatted with the level of laugh that I get for each punch and then the time between laughs, and the conditional formatting shows the it does a color for how long that space is so that I can visually I can show it to you right
now.
Has
anybody ever done that?
Not
that
I know
of. It feels like you
ought
to write a treatment because people are always trying to figure out what makes mirth.
Yeah.
You know, what's the source of it is.
Yeah.
And you've drilled it down to a timing.
Yeah.
And most of that timing when in the comedic world is sort of automatic for these guys, or they sort of conditioned to it.
Yeah.
Are you able to respond to an audience so you kind of can develop it away from the formatting?
Yeah, and that was probably my hardest thing in comedy between the spreadsheet and then the fact that I started in theaters, which is very unusual, I did have to learn to loosen up. So my agent, once I signed with agents, they sent me out on club tours because they were like, your comedy is good, but it's a little bit performative. And so you need to spend some time in clubs just talking to people.
Because as an audience member, you sort of feel like it's spontaneous what's coming at you.
Yeah.
You kind of want that illusion.
Yeah.
So to her vaginal skin, okay?
Oh, yeah. Yes, right.
So
yeah.
That is very much similar to the lining of the mouth or the lining of the inside of the vagina. It's sort of a transitional area. It's not quite the same, but it's similar. And it's obviously not skin, which is, again, you transition from skin, which is more the labia majora. And there are a bunch of glands around that area, the Skene's glands, Bartholin's glands. And some people, yeah, but most of them go sort of more inside. But some people, they can get a little bit more towards the outside. And so there is a certain amount of stuff there.
Huh.
And she clearly, I think she's noticing some lubrication or something. And that is not that common that people would notice it. And that's sort of why it's coming to mind for her. But yeah, it's nothing unusual. And nothing, people don't talk about it because it's usually kind of a nothing. It's a sort of, I mean, gynecologists think about it and worry about it. And you get cysts in that area and stuff that we have to deal with.
But yeah.
That's all. So, all right. Let's see. Medical videos. You want to try and solve some problems?
Yeah. All right. That sounds incredible.
Incredible. And then we'll look at some of Christina's TikTok, see what's inside her head.
I need a doctor to stitch this ASAP. Look at the marks on my upper back. It's spreading and it's getting darker. This is my back a month and a half ago. This shit is literally mutating. What the fuck is this?
You better show it to me again. I couldn't see anything. I may be too far away from this. And
what is that?
He's talking about that area, that dark. I'm going to guess. So some people, when they get irritations, they pigment. Okay, and he's got somewhat dark skin, and so he may. Some people depigment also when they have dark skin, but most I would say pigment, and he's having some sort of an allergic, eczema, rash, something there, and he needs to, start with some cortisone cream, but I doubt that's going to work because it's pretty thick skin up there, and he'll probably have to see a dermatologist that can figure.
I think
exactly.
I might know what it is.
Yeah, what do you say? What do you call it?
Tinea versicolor.
No, that's not tinea versicolor.
No.
I don't think. Tinea versicolor is typically depigmenting, right?
Yeah.
It blocks the sun from getting through, and that looks like a pigmented patch. Tinea versicolor is also called Malassezia furfur, crazy name, and it's very common. Your kids ever get those white blotches on their face and they show up in the summertime?
No.
Never saw that?
No.
It's very, very common. So.
I get those.
Yeah, I used to have one as a kid too. All right, another medical video.
Looks like a normal leg, right? Watch this.
Well, that's just edema. That's not a normal leg. He's got pitting edema, that is called.
Yikes.
When you had your deep venous thrombosis, did you have pitting edema like that?
It was similar to that.
Yeah.
And very painful. It doesn't seem like it's painful for him.
He might, because, he's doing the pitting. So it's when somebody else does it, people complain about the pain more than not. And so, that can be anything from heart failure to a blood clot to kidney failure to liver failure to a million other things. But that does not normally happen. That seems like a relatively young man, and that is not normal for a young man. And the fact that he is just showing us one leg and not two, if he had the kidney failure and whatnot, oftentimes people have asymmetric edema, and they notice it in one leg, and they've actually got it in both. So, again, he needs to see a doctor right away. Right away. It's not nasty. It's very common. It's just kind of unusual in a younger person. And God, it could be a million things. And then what's causing the kidney failure or the liver failure? It could be a billion other things. So, and medication sometimes even does that. All right, what else you got?
Okay. Can a TikTok optometrist tell me what the frick is wrong with my eyes? Because this morning,
uh-oh.
Oh my God, it's so funny. This morning, I woke up. And yes, I'm sleep deprived. I've worked about 40 hours in the last 2 days.
Yeah.
So yes, I am sleep deprived. And yes, I am working a day shift that I slept through the first hour of. But I'm here now. Can someone tell me why my eyes, like every time I use one eye, it's like if I'm using this eye to focus on like my phone right now.
Yeah.
I lose control of this eye.
Yeah, it's called a dyskinesia.
And there's like nothing. I've been sitting here for like 30 minutes trying to get them to be straight. It is so funny. I'm like at work, like talking to them like a fucking pirate. Like I need a fucking eye patch. Why? Yeah. Why are my eyes doing that?
So.
Poor thing.
Yes.
So she's working too hard.
That's very serious, actually. And so optometrist is not appropriate for that. I would just go to an ER immediately. She needs a CAT scan. It's called disconjugate gaze, and it's in the center of the brain where that sort of happens typically. It could be a lot of different things causing it, but she needs to be seen.
Yeah.
Pronto.
Yeah.
So I thought it was first the fact that what was happening. It's hard to tell these things when people are just spontaneously talking, but at first it looked like she had a lateral rectus palsy, like she couldn't pull her eye past midline, mm-hmm. but it's way worse than that, unfortunately. And lateral rectus palsy and double vision from that can be diabetes very commonly. So,
oh, I never knew that. Wow.
Good. It's a neuropathy, quite literally. Okay, let me pull out some emails and stuff here for you. We know we're getting into serious stuff here. Here's, I'm 25. I'm into jujitsu. I lift weights. I went to a doctor to ask about a way to speed up recovery. I had an elbow issue that was hurting me. A suggestion was to stop doing training altogether. He's 25. I asked about low-dose testosterone to help with the injury. He seems to think that because I'm young, I shouldn't need those things. Dude, Nathan, he is absolutely correct. Do not take steroids. Do not take testosterone. You're 25, dude. Come on. You shouldn't even need supplements at that age. But you might want to see a physical therapist if the elbow is the issue. And it's not about recovery from your training. It's not. It takes everybody a while to recover. It's about training properly, and it's about getting that elbow taken care of, whatever is going on there, and a physical therapist would help you with that. This testosterone thing drives me a little bit nutty.
Tell me about that.
Because I'm a fan of it for older men who have low testosterone. I mean, then fine. But people are taking testosterone because they're fatigued or they're not, you know, they want to get more out of their workouts. It's like taking thyroid hormone or something. You do it when there's a deficiency. And when there's a deficiency, there needs to be a diagnosis for why you're deficient. And that could be obesity. It could be opiate use. There are things that cause low testosterone that are not illnesses per se, but you still need an explanation for low testosterone before you start throwing supplements at somebody. It's just, ugh.
And it seems like people more and more younger and younger ages
it's
are
really
experimenting
not good.
With this.
It is not good. Let's see. I'm trying to get some stuff here. Here's another one. I took a testosterone booster.
At what age?
He doesn't say. He's a young person. I noticed, I was getting more and harder erections. Now I'm getting less erections and my hair is falling out. I decided not to take the supplement anymore. Yeah, no kidding. What damage might have been done? We need to get a proper workup done on you to see what the supplements have done to you. There are supplements that will raise testosterone to levels that, oh my God, here's another one.
Wow.
And by the way, I am a fan of supplements done properly. It's just done willy-nilly. It concerns me. Okay, what are your thoughts on adrenal fatigue? If you're a young person, it does not exist. Let's see. My cortisol was very high when it shouldn't be. That wouldn't be adrenal fatigue. That would be your adrenal glands are doing just fine. I got on vitamin C, pantothene, DHEA, and Adrenomend. Whatever that is. I lost 20 pounds and my anxiety has all gone. But when I Google adrenal fatigue, most websites say it's not a real thing. Most websites are right. But the fact that you were overweight and were able to lose 20 pounds, that probably reestablished your metabolism where it should be. I'm guessing you were fatigued and that sort of thing, which is why you're talking about adrenal fatigue. And weight loss excess weight for some people is really not good. They begin to get insulin resistance, their fatigue, their sleep is messed up. When you had do you have sleep problems with the pulmonary emboli?
Oh, I did. I don't now, but yeah. I mean, I couldn't breathe. It was because I was already on blood thinners when I got the pulmonary embolisms. They're like, there's not much more we can do. You were already on Lovenox.
Hold on a second. They put you on Lovenox because you had a pulmonary embolus.
No.
Why'd they put you on Lovenox?
I got pulmonary embolisms while I was already taking Lovenox.
But I'm a little confused. Why did they know to put you on Lovenox at all?
Because they knew I had the clotting disorder. I had previously been diagnosed.
Did you have a leg clot or something?
Yeah. I had a DVT, deep vein thrombosis, in my second pregnancy. And they were like, do not, under any circumstances, have any more kids.
I see. And then, so you had on Lovenox, did they... Did they There's a way to do it. You can give the heparin in a different way. You can adjust the heparin. It's called a mini-dose adjusted heparin. Do they do that?
Well, they just doubled it, what that is.
Or they just give you IV heparin, too. Do they talk about that at
all? Well, what's crazy is they did it during labor. The L&D nurses,
the IV heparin.
I am still a legend in the labor and delivery ward, because they brought in a heparin stand. Labor and delivery nurses were like, we've never seen one of these.
Well, because you bleed.
Yeah, right.
And you can dial it in really exactly, though. If you start bleeding, you can always back off. And then the clot's going to happen. Did they talk about putting something in your vena cava and all that stuff?
Oh, we tried. We did the thing where they snaked the thing, through your vein. They couldn't fully sedate me because I was pregnant.
Oh my God.
All the way in there, and they said it failed because my veins on the side were so expanded because of pregnancy. The filter would not have worked. And so he was like, I'm not putting it in because it's just a waste of time.
So they were able to see all that when they went in.
Yeah. Oh, I've been through it physically.
What pregnancy number was that?
This was six.
That was the last one. Okay,
yeah,
good.
Yeah.
I would not suggest you have more pregnancies.
My OB, when that baby was born, he gave me this very weary eyed look and he said, let's not do this again.
Yes.
Usually they say congratulations.
We made it.
I had 20 blood draws in one arm repeatedly during the labor. I looked like a heroin addict.
Were you here in one Austin, of the university hospital or something?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. So interesting. Well, I'm feeling a little less guilty about my medical participation these days because I feel like I'm in a very complicated case here.
Right. So see, you're helping me.
So it's, just being a part of a complicated case makes me feel worthwhile. So, all right. What do we got from Christina? We got some TikToks from her so we can see what's in her head. Oh, here we go. She's talking to us here. Okay, look at this guy.
Has sadly passed away. Bobby became the viral sensation known as Paint Eating Grandpa, rose to fame after his granddaughter shared a picture of him mistakenly eating half a tub of paint. This led to him becoming a famous meme and an extremely popular Halloween costume.
He's a popular one. Oh, here's another one. Well, we'll do that in a second one. But he drank paint evidently. Now, he looked very cheerful and lovely, but I wonder if that was all dementia. We're making fun of a demented person.
Yeah.
But then again, it's your mom's house. They do stuff like this here all the time. But he looked a little bit like something was up.
Yeah, I kind of got that impression.
Yeah,
too,
it's one thing to put your lips to a can of paint by accident thinking it was yogurt, but to take a half a thing.
And he had that look in it. My mother-in-law had Alzheimer's, and there's a certain look that you kind of recognize. Yeah.
Yeah. It could be minimal cognitive change after all.
Yeah.
Okay. Here are two Soxy Bears perfect match.
Okay.
Very important material. Thank you, Christina.
She's doing the Lord's work. So
graduated to wondering why we turn our socks inside out. All righty. Is there another voicemail for me?
Yep, you got it.
All right.
Hey, Dr. Drew and Dr. Drew. It's Daniel from Central California.
Daniel.
I had a question about vaginas.
Okay.
So I was wondering, through the menstrual cycle, does a vagina cleanse itself? Because as far as I know, it's the shedding of the uterine lining, right? Or something like that.
Yeah.
So, for example, this girl hooks up with a guy before her period and then hooks up with a guy after her period has started. Is that sloppy seconds? Keep them high and tight. I want to know.
I need to understand the question.
Shout out to everybody doing their thing and stuff like that.
What does he mean, sloppy seconds? I don't even know. Well, do you guys know what he means? He wanted you to use that word or ask the question or what? This is what men think about all the time. Men,
I didn't quite get it.
They've got to use their brain for good all the time. Or it goes very sideways.
That's why you guys have to be workaholics.
Yes. What is that, Chad?
Oh, I didn't quite get it. We can play a different one.
No. Let me do say one thing that we asked. The vagina and the whole urogenital system is a perfect instrument. It's designed to do what it does. And it doesn't... It takes care of itself. Now, women, these days use tampons and things like that. But even if they didn't, the vagina would be just fine. It's designed. It's a perfect.
Don't need to mess with it.
It's designed perfectly. So, okay, give me another one.
Drew and Booth Bros. This is Brian in Pennsylvania, and I've got a question about how diet can affect your sexual desire or sexual potency. Mm. So my girlfriend and I are going to be going on a vacation soon, and we haven't seen each other in a long time, and she just generally has a higher sexual drive than I do. Mm. So I was wondering if you have any tips or if it's even possible to increase your sexual desire or sexual potency by supplements or dietary changes or anything like that. Love the show. Keep it up. You guys are doing God's work. Piss on me. Beat me. You bet I'm coming up in May.
It's a greetings for this.
What happens when I do this?
Oh, I haven't heard from them in a long time. They've been around, the gagging couple?
I haven't seen much from them.
You know, I interviewed them on another show. Did they bring them in here too? I had the best time with them. And anyway, so...
okay, can his diet increase?
Yes. So yeah. you really... I'm overwhelmed by this question because there's a bunch of... We've just been talking about this. You don't take things when you're a young person to enhance anything, frankly. You should just be balanced diet, exercising. But having said all that, if you're overweight, for sure losing weight will raise your testosterone level. If you are a male, resistance training will raise your testosterone level. So get into the gym, start working out a little bit. But beyond that, that's it. Now, for somebody older, if there's if men's testosterone levels drop, if they're really having functional problems, they don't have prostate cancer, other contraindications, then sometimes you'll add some testosterone in. You're saying knowingly, yes.
Well, no. The reason I was nodding is because I was also thinking that I swear sometimes that kind of thing can be psychological too. We think it's diet. And I was just sitting there thinking, I just wouldn't be surprised if, this sounds so cheesy, but feeling better about himself. Right?
Well, this is back to
this is such
again.
A mom. Yeah, you know, like, does he feel good about himself? I'm revealing my own issues here.
it's a male-female thing again, because men, even if they're in proper shape, they don't care how they feel about themselves. Yeah. They're just moving on. They're moving on in. But it is important, though, that the relationship be functioning.
Right.
And when guys have sexual dysfunction, it's actually more that they're anxious because they're so into it.
Really?
That's when they have trouble. They when they're not into it. I mean, if they're not into it, they're not there.
Yeah.
You know, if they want to be there, if they really want to be there, then that's where sexual dysfunction comes in sometimes. Kind of
interesting.
Right?
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. I guess that makes sense. Yeah. I'm learning that I don't fully understand how men think after being married 20 years. I am still learning.
It's a different thing, and you see it more. You know, the odd thing to me is in the prime reproductive years. You know, that's when God decided to make us the most different.
Right.
Because it's those years when things are, because of the hormones and whatnot, things are a lot different. Well, listen, it's been a privilege to get to know you. It's been so fun. I hope you'll come back. And where should we find you? Where do you want people to go?
So Instagram is great. I also have a podcast. My name is The Jenful Weiler Show. I love my podcast. It's on YouTube. You can look it up on YouTube.
You have Patreon.
Patreon. Well, we can get to that later, but just look me up on YouTube. I have like 5 viewers there, so maybe you guys can make it 6 and 7.
Just
That'd be
exciting. Look up your name and that's
yeah,
it.
Yeah, just Jenful Weiler. And then, of course, I'm very active on Instagram.
Great. Pleasure. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you all for sending us voice messages, emails, and for calling in. And we'll see you next time.
All conversations and information exchanged during participation of the Dr. Drew After Dark podcast or interaction on the DrDrew.com website is intended for educational and entertainment purposes only. Do not confuse this with treatment or physician medical advice or direction per se. You must always follow your medical professional's advice and direction. Nothing on these podcasts or posted on this site supplements or supersedes the relationship and direction of your medical caretakers. Please understand, I am not playing the role of physician in this environment per se. I'm educating. I am a licensed physician with specialty boards in American Board of Internal Medicine and American Board of Addiction Medicine.